of Africa. They may not have had a Bible, and they may not have had a Holy Quran, but they were born into the universal book of God, where everything in His book is truth. And they studied that book. The native Indian, the native black. And when they're left alone, if you watch them, they built societies that had law and order in their tribes. They had tribal customs, and if you look at the way they live, their law, and then you look at what Moses taught, Moses didn't bring nothing new except to those that he taught. But that law is law among all of the civilized people, and even those in the jungle got a law that they live by. And if you took time to study them, rather than say they're heathens, they could have taught the Europeans a lot, but he was so arrogant. Even among the Mayans were so far advanced beyond the Europeans that the Europeans came, and when they met the Mayans, they met them with a highly developed civilization. They knew mathematics and science, and they wrote their science in books. And the missionaries burned their books, and it took them a long, long time to learn what the Mayans already knew and had written, but white supremacy would not allow them to learn from the people that they call heathens. I want you to hear me, black man, because white supremacy is not Christianity. White supremacy is not righteousness. Whenever you take your color and make your color the badge of honor and somebody else's color a badge of dishonor, you have dishonored yourself, and you've shown disrespect to God and the infinite wisdom of His creation. Follow me. Follow me. Look at the universe. We have in our universe a sun with 9 beautiful planets. From the close planet Mercury to the far planet Pluto, all of them manifest a different color. This planet manifests a color that is blue. Mars is called the red planet. Each planet has its color. If the planets could talk, would you hear any one of them saying, you know what? I better than that one because my color, so. You would say the planet is talking foolish. Look at the earth. You got black earth. You got brown earth. You got red earth. You got white earth. And you never hear any member of the family of earth say, I'm better because I'm black. That talk is reserved for foolish human beings. The rocks, some of them black, some of them brown, some of them red, some of them white. No talk of which one has a better color. Go ahead, look at your diamonds. They reflect all the colors. Look at your rubies. Look at your emeralds. These are the stones that God put in the earth, all these various colors. You like to put on your rubies, put on your sapphire, put on your diamond, put on your this and your that, and you want to show off your colors, eh? But you can't say which one better than the other. Look at the flowers. Look at the plants. Look at the beautiful colors in the birds. Look at the ants. Nobody talks that foolishness but the human being. And the reason the human being talks it is because he's sick. And I'm sorry, white people, we would never have had to talk about black if you hadn't spent so much time talking about white. You wanted everything of value to be white and everything of non-value to be black. And you have poisoned religion Islam is poisoned.
That's right,
I want you to hear me, Muslim.
Yes,
I said Islam is poison.
Yes,
the practice of it, not the iman,
yes,
but the practice is poison.
On,
because
man,
racism has poisoned the bloodstream of Islam. Racism has poisoned the bloodstream of Christianity. Racism has poisoned the bloodstream of Judaism. Tell me I'm a liar. So all of it is sick and in need of a doctor. And if you don't get a cure soon, God intends to wipe the slate and start again. Did you hear me? Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, 80 days before he passed from this earth, he talked to his beloved community. And he said, and I quote, "There is no superiority of the white over the black, or the Arab over the non-Arab. The best of you is he that is most careful of his or her duty to God." Why did he say that? Because he saw the seed of racism right in his own community, and he knew what was coming. He knew that you would be taken off the path by Shaitan. Muslims, you're in trouble today. Not because of Israel, not because of America. You're in trouble because you deviated from the path of God. That's why you're in trouble. And if you don't come back to the path of God, you will be destroyed. You are now weak as a community when God raised you to be the guide for humanity. Now the human family is laughing at you. Listen to me. You're in the United Nations. All these Muslim nations. And just like the Quran says, you would take this book and put it behind your backs. Because the leaders don't judge with this book. They don't rule with this book. They rule. And they say, La ilaha illallah. There is no God but Allah. And his partner is the government of the United States. So they obey Washington. They obey the United Nations. And they forsake the Quran. How could Muslims be raped and ravished in Bosnia? And the other members of the Muslim world won't send them weapons to defend themselves because there's an embargo. God didn't put the embargo on them. America did. And you will bow down to America instead of bowing down to Allah. You let America put sanctions on Iraq. You don't know the real story. I don't have time to tell it all, but I'm going to tell some of it. Everywhere the British went, everywhere the British ruled, when it was time for the British to get out, they would take territory from one nation and give it to another, knowing that sooner or later there would be border conflict. And then they'd sell weapons to one side and sell weapons to the other side. Kuwait was, in fact, the 19th province of Iraq. But when the British got ready to leave, they didn't want all that oil to belong to the Iraqis. So they split up that area into sheikdoms. Talk to me. As long as they control the oil, they let certain families get benefit, and families became rich. And some of them shared the wealth with the people. But as long as England and America had access to the oil, they didn't care nothing about democracy. Talk back to me if I'm wrong. Why does America see Iran and Libya as enemies? What have they done? Let me tell you. was the leader in Iran. The British and the Americans wanted that oil. Mohammed Mossadegh nationalized the oil industry so that the Iranians could get the benefit of what was theirs. And the CIA arranged a coup and took Mohammed Mossadegh out and put the Shah on the throne. They made the Shah their man in that area. They gave him planes, they gave him weapons, because he was going to be the gendarme of that area. He was gradually moving the people away from Islam and persecuting people who loved Islam, but he was all right with America, because America didn't give a damn who was suffering under his rule as long as they had access to the oil. Y'all all right? You don't mind me telling truth, do you? And while Jimmy Carter was whining and dining, the Shah, you could see smoke on the White House lawn from tear gas, because the Iranians in America were marching against the Shah. And in the twinkling of an eye, Imam Khomeini came to power. And Imam Khomeini, I don't care what you think about him, but he loved Islam. He loved Allah, and he hated what he saw the West doing to Islam. And so he came up with a revolutionary Islam, all right. He wanted to return Islam to its pristine purity, and he wanted to establish an Islamic state ruled by the laws of the Quran. There is no perfect ruler, and there's no perfect human being. He made his errors, he made his mistakes, but his intention was his love of Islam. Now here it is. In the meantime, when he talked about spreading that kind of Islam throughout that area, the sheikhdoms begin to quake. Saudi begin to quake. And America said, oh no, this can't happen. And what you don't know is, the Saudis gave Iraq $80 billion to make Iraq a military power as a bulwark against the rise of Imam Khomeini. Hear me, because when Khomeini came to power, all the weapons that America had poured in there were now in the hands of the revolutionaries. So America, listen. America wanted to build a bulwark against Khomeini. So they urged Saudi, look, help them. Saudi spent $80 billion. $80 billion. $80 billion. This didn't come to me from a book. I got it from the mouth of Prince Bandar, the ambassador. I'm not putting his business in the street. I sat down with my brother. I love Arabia. That is the house where the sacred house of Islam is. There's not a Muslim on this earth who should not love where that sacred house is. Even though we may not love what may be going on. Well, anyway, $80 billion. And who stood in line to get the money? No, no, no. Iraq got the money. But America, France, Russia, everybody that make weapons was ready to spend Saudi money. Do you hear me? The French helped Iraq to build a nuclear reactor. The moment the reactor was built, Israel bombed it. All that money down the drain. Nobody talked to Israel about that. I'm protecting myself because they don't deserve to have nuclear weapons. Listen, listen now. Listen. Then a war was provoked between two Muslim nations. And Iran and Iraq fought each other for 8 solid years, killing nearly 1 million of the best young Muslims in both those countries, billions of dollars of property damage, and they fought to a stalemate. But when the war was over, since America would not give any parts to Khomeini, and America took the side of Saddam. You didn't hear me? Y'all all right? You know, I have never been here before, and I don't know when I'll come back again. Hopefully. And I want the government to know I'm not saying this to produce hatred for America, but I'm saying this so we can see what is going on, that we can correct America. Because America stands in need to be corrected. Now, brother and sister, when the war was over, Iraq was in a better position, still strong enough to wreak havoc in that area. Did you know that there were some border problems with Kuwait? And when Iraq said, hey, look, you know, I can't continue to take this, we're going to move in, she talked to the American ambassador. American ambassador said, well, that's your problem, you know what I mean? You know, that's your internal matter. We ain't going to deal with that. So Saddam moves into Kuwait. Then the Iron Lady from Britain, Margaret Thatcher, flies to Aspen, Colorado, and meets with Bush. Then the next thing you know, Bush is saying, Saddam, you got to get out of Kuwait. They have a psychological profile on Saddam Hussein. They know once he makes that kind of move, he's not easy to yield. So they started organizing all the nations now. But all of this was for the benefit of Israel. There must not be any military power in that area that can threaten Israel. I want you to hear me. Listen. So now all the nations are united against Iraq. And guess what? They all get together, 33 nations, I think it's 28 or 29 armies, and they beat Iraq. And in the meantime, 400 or more fires are started in the oil fields of Kuwait. Kuwait got billions of dollars in banks in the West. Now she's on fire. You understand? America said, we'll put out the fire. And we'll help you rebuild. But you gotta bring all your reserves out the bank now. They made the Saudis pay, the American soldiers. The Saudis paid for this. And in the Congress of the United States, one arrogant American congressman said, we made a profit off of this war. Saudi treasures weakened. Now for the first time, Saudi got to borrow money. Kuwaiti almost had to spend all her reserves to rebuild. Who was the beneficiary? When I visited Iraq, I learned that nearly 500,000 Iraqi babies have died since the end of the war. And this figure is agreed to by the World Health Organization. Sanctions is a weapon of mass destruction. And the reason they're sanctioning the people is they don't like Saddam. If they don't like Saddam, they punish the people until the people rise up and kill Saddam. And if the people don't rise up and kill Saddam, then to hell with the people. So on the cover of Economist magazine, they say we're so damned if we do and so damned if we don't. Y'all all right? Just a couple more points. I love you, Toronto. Honest to God, I'm so happy to see you. But I want to give you something to do before we leave. But let me finish this. Now, since the war is over, and Saddam is weakened, weakened, weakened. But since they didn't go all the way to Baghdad and kill him, they're angry. So the sanctions are to force the people to do it for them. The CIA went up among the Kurds to exacerbate the tensions in that area, putting one faction against the other. Saddam moves in his own territory to quell a rebellion. He took one side against the other. America says, what are you doing? Man, his own house. In America, Bill Clinton, who never went to the army, he's commander-in-chief now, and so he sends some missiles. What was that for? Politics. He allowed Shimon Peres because he saw Netanyahu gaining momentum, and Peres was looking like a dove and Netanyahu looking like a hawk, speaking the language that the Israelis like to hear. And so, on a pretext, Peres bombs Lebanon from land, sea, and air for 2 weeks, and Clinton looks the other way.
That's right.
A political move to strengthen Shimon Peres. That is state-sponsored terrorism agreed to by America. But who cares about a few Arabs in southern Lebanon? Who cares about little Iraqi babies dying? I went to the hospital. I saw babies 2 years old that weighed 10 pounds. I saw children dying of leukemia with no medicine. And there were doctors with me, and they refused to call it a hospital. They said it was a death camp. Because anytime you got a hospital with no medicine, you're presiding over dying people because you have no ability to heal them. Even the incubators that had broken down, America and the United Nations wouldn't even let pots go in because it could be used, they said, for military purposes. I saw this with my eyes. I saw a bomb shelter. It was one of the strongest bomb shelters I had ever seen in my life. And while the young men were at the front in the south, women and children would go in this bomb shelter, and old men. And in this bomb shelter, it held about 1,200 people. And in that bomb shelter, when the bombs were falling, they went in. They told us that the bombs were for military targets. But they didn't hit military targets alone. They hit the civilian population. Here was a bomb shelter that they sent a bomb down. One of these bombs that have a drill on it. And the bomb drilled in to this building and made a hole. And then another bomb followed that bomb into the hole. And it started an explosion, and there were 7,000 degrees of Fahrenheit in that building. When we went in, we saw women and children's flesh on the wall, in the ceiling, on the floor. And you're going to tell me that this is a human being? You're going to tell me that this is a righteous government? And you're going to tell me that I should shut my mouth when I see that kind of stuff? If I'm a racist, why would I be concerned about what Arabs are suffering? If I'm a racist, why would I be concerned about my white Muslim brothers in Bosnia? I'm not a racist. I never have been a racist. I'm not a bigot. I love faith. I don't care what the faith is. I tolerate everybody's faith because that's the way the Prophet of Islam was. I'm not anti-Semitic. I hate anti-Semitic. anti-Semitism. Anybody that would attack a Jewish synagogue, turn over a Jewish gravestone, and bother Jewish people because of their Jewishness, I hate that, and I've never been guilty of that. And I wouldn't tolerate that. But that does not mean that I don't have the right to criticize Jewish behavior when it ill affects black people and other people. Now, let's get to Libya. Here's Muammar Gaddafi, a young man in his 20s. He overthrows the king in a bloodless coup in Libya. The oil in Libya is being taken by the British and the Americans. Very little of the oil wealth is being spread to the Libyan people. Gaddafi takes over. First thing he does is like Mossadegh, he nationalizes the oil. That means America don't like him. That means the British don't like him. We gotta look at motives here. This is a lawyer. When you deal with crime, it is the motive that you look at before you can determine what is the punishment for the crime. You gotta see that America and England have had it in for Gaddafi ever since he kicked him out of the rulership over the oil. Then, the British had an air base in Tobruk. He took it back and put them out. The Americans had an air base right outside of Tripoli called Wheeler's Air Base. He took that back and put them out. He started taking the oil revenue and sharing it with his people, building schools.
Yes, right.
To educate his people.
Yes,
but anybody that's loved by his people and serving the people and not serving greedy corporate interests becomes an enemy to governments, because the governments are whores that are bought by greedy corporations. I know it hurts. I know it hurts. Somebody gotta tell it. At the cost of my life, it's all right with me. Somebody has to tell it. The people are dying because people are cowardly. You know the truth, but you shut your mouth because you want some favored position. But what position will you have in the future? Where are your children going? If somebody don't stand up and tell the truth and make a change here, all of us will die, because there's madness in governments. There's madness in the political leaders. And they lie to the people to deceive you and make you think it's democracy, it's freedom and justice that they're fighting for, when all they're fighting for is advantage for the rich, and the suffering of the poor continues unabated. Libya and Muammar Gaddafi finances liberation struggles. It's true. If you want to overthrow your government and your government was not good for the people and you were that kind of group, he would use his own money and finance you. Well, if you're a government whose corporations are sucking the blood of those nations, then you don't want a liberation struggle. You want to maintain the status quo.
Right.
America's on the wrong side of history. She became free because she fought against the colonial power of the British. And now she has been on the side of every dictator on earth. This is wrong. This is wrong. My government is wrong. Somebody gotta say it. She's wrong. I don't like the method. That's not my method. I told Brother Gaddafi, I'm a revolutionary. I said, but I'm not going to use no gun. Because you just go with a gun and you replace somebody, you just as foolish as the person you shot. then you step in with your half-knowledge self, and then somebody pulls a coup on you, and then a coup, and a coup, and a coup. I said, no, no, no. I said, I've held up the Quran. I said, I'll produce my revolution with the Bible and the Quran, because the best revolution is to change the man's heart, change the man's mind, change the way he thinks. And then when you take on a change in your head and in your heart, then you can change your environment. And that's why Paul said, be ye not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewal of your mind. That's the kind of revolution that Jesus was bringing about. And that's the kind of revolution that Prophet Muhammad was bringing about. Change of mind, change of heart. And that's why it's written in the Quran, God will never change the condition of a people until they change themselves. Some scholars say, until there's a change in your own heart, there will never be another change. God won't help you unless you make a change.
Yes, sir.
And you know you need to make a change.
Yes, sir.
So now they say Gaddafi bombed some discotheque in Germany. And two American service people were killed. Reagan now orders the most expensive assassination attempt in the history of the world. Bombers flying out of England, coming down. France, they say, wouldn't let them cross French territory. So they had to go down Atlantic Ocean into the Mediterranean and refuel in the air and then bomb Gaddafi's house. They wanted to kill the man. What did he do? He's good for his people, bad for business. Then we find out he never was responsible for the bombing of the disco. Now they say he's responsible for Pan Am 103. Now wait now. This is not funny. It's not funny.
That's right.
Because these people with this television and these newspapers, they have the power to define you. They have defined me to you. Listen to what they say. He's a hate monger. Have you heard any hate coming out of my mouth? Listen, listen, listen. I don't hate my country. I was born in America. I live in America. What I hate is injustice. And if God has put it in my heart to speak truth to power, then leave me alone. I'm going to do it whether I got any backing of people or not. God is sufficient for me. But because I trust in God, you respect that. And you know that they don't buy me. You know I'm not bought, don't you? You know I'm your man, don't you? Brothers and sisters, listen to this. After Pan Am 103, they said it was the Syrians with the Iranians for almost 2 years. Then they changed it. Said, oh no, it was Gaddafi. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's Gaddafi. Then they go to the United Nations. That's what makes you know that the United Nations is weak. Because he goes to the United Nations and says, unless Gaddafi turns over the two alleged suspects, we're going to put sanctions on him. Sanctions against millions of people, over 270 lives, and an allegation that is yet to be proved true. Does that sound fair to you?
No, sir.
Does that sound like justice to you?
No, sir.
The families of the victims deserve justice in this matter. Gaddafi said, I'll release my nationals, but I won't release them to England or America because I don't think they'll get a fair trial. But I'll release them to any third country. Now, does that sound reasonable to you? He said, let them be tried at the World International Court of Justice at The Hague and let the judge even be Scottish, and I'll turn mine over. America and England said, no! Come on with us! Look at that arrogance. They don't want justice. They want to crush Gaddafi. Oh, it's really sad, isn't it? It's really sad. And when you go there, I watched, I was just there, you know, they voted for me to have a prize. It's called the Gaddafi Prize. And it carries with it a gift of $250,000. But the government of the United States, after Gaddafi saw the Million Man March, he called me on the telephone. And he said, Brother Farrakhan, he said, I will back the Nation of Islam with the wealth of Libya. Because he saw a transformation taking place. Now, they said it was $1 billion that he wanted to give. And suddenly, certainly I wanted to receive it. I mean, what could I do with $1 billion for me? I live in a nice home. I drive nice cars. I wear nice clothes. I eat good food. I don't need the money for me. But $1 billion. The black man in America gets $438 billion out of the American economy. And less than 0.1% of it comes back to us because we're not providing goods and services for ourselves. So the money comes in our hands and goes right back out. But with that billion, I could have primed the well. And if we could have attracted just 10% back into our community, that's $43 billion, then we could rebuild the wasted cities. Yes, we could have taken some of that money and invested it in the economies of the Caribbean and Africa. Yes, but the moment Gaddafi said, I'd like to back you, you know what they did? They went and made a law. Right away in Congress. Don't give that fair can nothing. So I had to petition the government to get the gift for the Gaddafi Prize, and I petitioned them to get the big gift for our people. Well, they cut back on welfare. They cut off affirmative action. They cut back entitlement programs. Huh? These people are serious. They're going to balance the budget on the backs of the poor. People living under bridges, living in cardboard boxes, dying in the heat in the summer and the cold in the winter. With $1 billion, we could put construction companies to work, building homes for the homeless, but they don't see that. All they see is it's Gaddafi and Saki. They don't even call me Farrakhan. They say Farrakhan. So now we have to take the U.S. government to court, and we're gonna fight it all the way, all the way. You know why? We don't believe that the United States government has any right to abridge my freedom to accept a gift from my Muslim brother simply because there's an allegation that he's a terrorist. Well, hell, I would like to go before the world and list what my government has done. And put it up against what Gaddafi is alleged to have done. See, we know what our government has done. Now, America has come up with the Helms-Burton law. They hate Cuba so much,
When I was there, I had a two-hour meeting with President Castro, and he said, Brother Farrakhan, we can't even buy an aspirin. Do you know that Cuba is a black country? 70% of the people in that country look just like you. And they're suffering, not because they're communists. They're suffering because of an unjust embargo, because America does not like the fact that in this hemisphere, Castro has chosen to go another way. Now, wait a minute. Castro looks like a white man, don't he? Wait a minute.